that extraordinary people are ordinary people who do extra. And this was one of the biggest revelations to me.
Welcome to the Greg Allen Podcast. Thanks for joining us, where we talk about life. I truly believe that everyone has a story to tell and a lesson to teach, and that's what this show is all about. So if you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave us a review. It helps us connect, inspire, and help more people like you. And I just want to do a big shout out to you for taking the time to grow and improve. So good on you. Keep doing what you're doing, and good luck in life. Hey everyone, we're joined by Julian Mather today. Thank you so much for joining us, Julian.
Are you stoked to be here?
So I'm excited because I'm going to be able to dive back into your history. I was reading your profile and you've done some really cool things, but I'd love for you to go back and just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you are currently doing as well now.
Look, I guess, Greg, if I said I was one thing, it would be a career reinventionist. I've been really good at reinventing myself over the years into completely different careers and jobs. Probably go back to the start and start there, which is school. And I always say I did really well at school, if you don't count learning. And ducked and dived and weaved a bit. This is worth mentioning because I became a chronic truant in year 12. So, I became great at wagging school. I wagged months. But what I did was that because I didn't think school and the education system suited me, and so I took myself to the state library where I live in Brisbane and I educated myself because I wanted to be a photojournalist. And so I just went there and read every book on photography and every book on travel and every book on photojournalism. And it's funny when you read things, like you get lots of information, but when you reread things over and over and over, quite often the secrets are in there, but they're written between the lines. You have to decipher what those secrets are. And I realized that if I wanted to be a photojournalist, what the secret was, it wasn't going to happen in Brisbane. Because if all the books I was looking at were all these places overseas where all these, great stories were happening. Yeah. So that's how I knew that I had to get out of Brisbane. And so I thought, how am I going to do this? I mean, I was just, pretty young and dumb and stupid at that time. And so I was walking down the street and I saw a bus shelter with an army recruiting poster on the side of it. And it had these soldiers and they were walking through a pine forest with their rifles. And they were pine trees. And, in Australia, we have eucalypt trees. And that seemed exotic, pine trees somewhere else in the world. Yeah. And I thought, that's my key. I'll go join the army and that will get me to where something is happening. So literally a week later, I'd signed up in the army and that's when the yelling started. And it didn't stop for about 3 years. Because when I got in there, I said, because I sold myself on my strengths as a photographer. And they said, certainly. But when I got in there, they said, oh, they didn't tell you that, did they? We've got a better place for you over here in the infantry.
Oh, really?
And when I was in the infantry, I was like, well, I wasn't planning where I was going. And I wasn't happy with the people who were giving me the commands because I didn't respect a lot of them, to be honest. And so I looked around within the infantry of where I could go that I could get out of the chain of command. And I realized that being an army sniper was where you were tasked directly by a battalion commander. So, look, took me a fair bit of effort because I was not what you call a great shot. I had to learn to be a good shot and I had to learn all the other skills of camouflage and concealment and stalking and a whole lot of other things. But, look, it was hard work, but I got into the sniper section and that's how I ended up being an army sniper. But, I learnt a lot in there. And one thing that they used to say, have you got your rifle? Check. Have you got your radio? Check. Have you got your mirror? Check. Because they used to give us these little polished steel mirrors and, use them for shaving and just general purpose. But the other thing that they would always say, if you're out there by yourself and you've got a problem, ask the man in the mirror because he's the one who's going to sort your problems for you. And it's where I learn about personal responsibility.
Yeah.
And so, learned many things, but that idea of looking through this narrow scope for the rest of my life was not how I saw my life going. So, left the army and ducked and dived and weaved because I wanted a wider view of the world, like literally a wide angle lens, and got into doing what I wanted to do, and that was be a photojournalist. And so for 25 years, I worked for ABC TV and National Geographic and BBC and Discovery. It's what I call the second best job in the world. They literally put a plane ticket in one hand, money in the other, kick me out the door and say, go tell people stories. Went to some great places, but more than that, it was the people in front of the lens who influenced me. And I call them my VIPs, my very inspiring people. Yeah. And they changed my thinking. And, look, many things have happened after that. But if you want to go back and dive into any of those, stories that I've just told you.
Yeah, I do actually. So let's go back to school. Let's go back to school. And you said that I did pretty well if you don't count learning. So let's talk about, like, how did you navigate school? What were you like at school for anyone that's younger now and aspiring to be a cameraman or to travel the world or all this sort of stuff? Like, what would you say to your younger self at school?
Yeah, right. So number one, your academic achievement is not your destiny. So this whole idea that they teach you, that you go through and you've got to get, if you stay to year 12 and you get your OP score and it's all important, that will get you into the next phase of your education, but it accounts for little these days.
Yeah.
What is particularly important these days is, and particularly because AI, artificial intelligence, is changing the workforce and the way we work. If you've got smarts, it's not, you're like, okay, good on you, but there's other things more important at the moment. And one is attitude. And because, no, I'll tell you this from, I'm coming up to 60 now. So, I've worked with a lot of people and I've hired people as well. And if two people came to me and one, had the academic record but was a pain in the ass, and the other came and didn't really have the marks but came and said, listen, I'm putting myself out there. I don't know that much, but I am willing to learn and I'm willing to, to turn up and do everything you ask me. Bingo, that is the person that I want to work for me. Having the right attitude now is so important. And if you're listening to this and you don't understand why, if you've got a bad attitude, you cost your employer money. You cost your employer money because, they might have to lose you and replace you. That costs them a lot of money. And you cost them a lot of sleep. And no one wants to go home if you're an employer and be worrying about all this stuff. And it's such a seriously, if you're thinking, oh gosh, I didn't do all that well and stuff, just work on your attitude.
Yeah.
Right now, coming into the 2020s, it's going to be one of your biggest strengths, because having this natural ability to be smart at something, it's all skills. And if you apply yourself, you can learn skills. I did that when I was an army sniper. I wasn't a great shot, but I knew that that was my pathway out. So I applied myself to learning the particular skills. And shooting, by the way, is a series of steps. And if you follow the series of steps, you can be an accurate shot.
Yeah, it's like any process management. If you learn the process, then anyone can be good at it if it's a good process. So
have to. And and going back to school as well, I was a shy kid. I was the last person ever picked for a sports team. I'm an introvert now. I mean, I might be performing here because I've learned these skills. I've learned communication skills. That's another thing we can talk about. If it drives me insane with tradies. I know that you work with the electrical trade. Guys, if you go and get your skills out there and you think it's all about just doing the job and you don't think it's about communicating with a customer and treating and turning up on time and getting on the phone and staying in contact, boy, oh boy, I'll tell you as a customer who's worked with tradies and book tradies over the years, the people I recommend all the time are the people who have great customer service. Yeah. I know everyone's going to do the job okay, but if you can master the customer service, I don't know what you teach them, Greg, out there or promote, but I'm just telling you from a customer perspective.
Mainly that. Yeah, mainly it's about your attitude and the way that you present and communicate. So it's across all industries. It's not just, you know, it's not just a trade industry. It's all industries and all personalities. And anyone going through school at the moment is wondering, oh, what am I going to be? What am I going to do? You know, as long as you've got a lot of energy and enthusiasm and positivity, you know, you're going to do well. It doesn't matter what you do, like you were saying, Julian. So
yeah, and I completely agree with that. And I'm just going to jump forward here because it's a good segue into talking about that.
Right.
So when I traveled the world for 25 years, I met a lot of people and I worked with a lot of successful people. They might have been in politics. They might have been in sport. They might have been in education. They might have been in entertainment. Here's something I learned that was common about all successful people I met, well, almost all successful people that I met, that extraordinary people are ordinary people who do extra. And this was one of the biggest revelations to me, because I always thought, oh, you know, like, you know, in my, I wasn't born with the right family or the right education or what, you know, you make all these excuses for yourself.
Sure. Yeah.
And by watching all these people, because here's the thing, we would go and film with these people and we'd say, oh, can we film with you early on, say Monday morning? And they go, oh, Monday morning's not a good morning, because Monday morning I get up early and go for my run. Or how about Tuesday morning? Oh, Tuesday morning's not a good morning, because, you know, we take the kids to there. Well, what about Wednesday night? Oh, Wednesday night's not a good night, because they were always doing extra stuff that was not part of their job. They were always doing personal development or professional development,
yeah,
or being involved. And being successful, even if you've got some really good skills in one area, unless you put that extra work in, you're not going to go anywhere. But the great thing about that, Greg, was extraordinary people are ordinary people who do extra. That means to be extraordinary, you have to be ordinary to begin with.
Yeah.
Exhibit A, Your Honor, the world's most ordinary person.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had some minor successes along the way, but I'm just a regular guy. I honestly am. I've just worked out that I'm going to put the extra time in. And quite often, I simply outlast people. They just can't keep up.
Yeah. I'm similar, actually. Like, I'll keep going, even though it might not be the fastest, you know, ascent. I'll keep going when everyone else falls off the wagon. You know, so endurance there, and making sure that you're always pushing and having an end goal, and then, you know, always looking for that next step to go to, I think is important for continuous growth over time as well.
Oh, it is. And over time, can we talk about time?
Yeah, let's talk about time.
Yeah, because here's the thing. So many people say, yes, I want to change and I want to do this and I want to be something in 6 months or in 12 months' time. Everything I have ever done, I work in 5-year blocks. I think it's really hard to do substantial change in your life in anything less. So I have what I call my 18-25 rule, because I reckon that all you have to do is one small thing every day and do it consistently for a long period of time. So 18-25 comes from 5 years, 365 days a year. 5 times 365 is 18-25.
Right,
if you do 1,825 small things every day, one a day, take time, what happens is really not so much become the new thing that you're after, you become less of the old thing that you were.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a process. So if you're frustrated that things aren't happening for you, there is, you know, it's, you know, stickiness, just sticking at it. And look, I've done a lot of things, Greg, but I've failed at a lot of things as well. Yeah. And I'm not scared of failure. I mean, failure is just this wonderful teacher. I mean, the only time I get really upset is if I make the same mistake twice, because it means I wasn't really learning or listening from it. But anyone who thinks you're just going to go out there and you're going to have success, you've just got to go, you know, it's not about being knocked down. Failure is not getting knocked down, it's staying down. Mm. If you stay down there because something didn't go right, that's the problem. You just got to get back up and get into it. Because I know, you know, like I said, I'm coming up to 60 now. But I'm got another 20 years in me, and I've got another 2 or 3, you know, career reinventions. I don't know what they are, but I know along that path I'm going to have more failures. It just doesn't worry me, because, I don't know, that's just the way life goes.
Yeah, So you'd say about every 5 years you sort of adapted, changed and morphed into something new?
Well, not necessarily, because like I was a documentary cameraman for 25 years and even a lot of that too was, I mean, that was a great job. I was like, I had to think, about giving that up. Yeah. But what happened was that I had all these people in front of the lens who I was filming influencing, and they were influencing my thinking. And so I got this idea that I was going to take a program into schools and create change in the world. It was all around philanthropy, about giving large amounts of money away. I won't go into the detail, but I got so involved in this that I walked away from television at the top of my game. And I took this program into schools that was going to change the world, and I took it into deafening silence. And I'd asked before I went out, I'd asked teachers and parents and principals, is this a worthy program? They said, it's very worthy. It's very valuable. I said, well, why won't you book me? And they said, you never asked us that question. That was a completely different conversation we never had. You see, I thought money grew on trees. I wasn't, I always worked from someone. I worked for someone. I'd never run a business. I had no idea. I thought you just took something out and they would come. And I learned my first lesson about business. Never open a restaurant unless you've got a starving crowd. I mean, you've got to have a need for your service. You've got to be able to solve someone's problem out there that they're willing to pay money for.
Yeah.
I didn't really get that. And so that was a big failure that I had.
Yeah, we've definitely noticed that in our family. My wife she has a charity that she's been running for 11 years, and we go out and we talk to people about the issue, and because it doesn't affect them directly, they don't take action. It's like, it's a bit of a shame when so many communities could benefit from just a little bit. We definitely noticed that. It's like people like your concept, but would they buy it? Would they pay their own money that they've worked for to make this a reality?
And that's another great lesson for people. So if you've got an idea and you want to try something, this is, concept of the MVP, the minimum viable product. So take what you want to do it and just make it in its most basic form and put it out there and test it. But here's the thing. That's actually not hard to do, but so many people don't do it. And why don't they do it? Because they're afraid people are going to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, I felt the same, because it's like, well, I don't want people thinking that I'm an idiot, that, I got this idea. And so I've learned now that this is part of the process. No, something failing or people saying no doesn't mean that it's wrong or it's a bad idea. It's just not right at this current time. It doesn't mean that that idea in 5 or 10 years' time, people just might be desperate for that. But right now, it's not the right time.
Yeah, sure. No, totally. So I'd love to go back and talk about your experience in the Army. Was it Army, sorry?
Yes, the Army.
Yeah. So how was that? Like, what was that whole experience like, and what did you learn from that?
Well, I would recommend anybody, if you're a bit lost as I was, just trying to find direction, that giving 3 years of your time to that is a wonderfully smart thing to do, because you're not going to lose. If you go in there and saying, what can I get out of this 3 years? There's so much and so much you can learn about yourself. I mean, you'll learn a ton of new skills, but you'll learn a whole heap about yourself. Because what happens is, when you go through the Army process, is they put you into basic training. And the idea of basic training is that they take everything away from you. And when I say everything, I mean everything. Everything you go in with, your personal bag, everything they take away from you, and even your hair. They take your hair away from you, and they issue you with everything, and everyone's got the same stuff. And then, so everyone's working from the level field, and then they go through, it's a process of testing you, because they want to see how you work under pressure. Because essentially, I mean, let's face it, I mean, if you join the Army, you might have to go and do active service. Well, you don't want to be working out there with somebody who you can't rely on. And so you learn all these great things about working in a team, about what you think, you know, things you didn't think you could do, and, you know, diving down to, you know, depths within yourself and achieving things. Wonderful experience. So, you know, but the thing is, it's only 3 years. And I know when you're young, 3 years sounds like a massive amount of time. It goes pretty darn fast. Very useful on an employment resume. If you go in and you've done military service, because what it says is that you've been tested. Yeah. Like if you've gone through and got out, doesn't matter what you've done, it just says, oh, this person has been pressure tested, right? So tick that box. We don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, yeah. They'll handle themselves. Yeah. So have you got any stories from the army in the time there that you know, from some of those things that you learned, there was a story where you came to light and it's like, yes, that's, you know, I've learnt this from that.
Yeah, experience. Sure. Okay, we'll go back, because I spent most of my time as a sniper. So what happens when you're sniping, right? You've got to be an accurate shot from 0 to 600 meters. So one hit, one effective target.
Yeah.
Then from 600 meters to 1,000 meters, it's called accurate harassing fire. That's 3 out of 5 shots land. When you're firing over that distance, okay, let me go back a step. You know when you watch movies and you see snipers go in and there's a brick wall and they put their weapon down on the brick wall, yeah, and their tripod legs down. Yeah. That's all wonderful if there's a brick wall, if it's all comfortable like that. But a lot of the times you've got nothing to fire on, you know, nothing to rest on. So you're trained in this thing called sling supported. So, you know, like a rifle has a sling on it.
Yeah.
There's a configuration that you wrap the sling around your arm. And what happens is when the rifle's lying across here, with the sling this way, when you push forward like that, it pulls the butt of the rifle back into your shoulder. So the more you push down there, the harder it comes in your shoulder. Oh, and yeah, this becomes really rock steady. And wherever you move, the rifle points like this. So you can do from standing or sitting or leaning. It's called sling supported. With everything, with every convenience, there's always a consequence. And the consequence of that is, have you ever put a tourniquet around your arm or your tight bandage, you feel your pulse start to come through? So with that sling, the tighter you go, your pulse starts to come through. Now, when you're looking in through telescopic sights, between 600 and 1,000 meters, crosshairs almost obliterate a target. And what happens is that your pulse starts to make the telescopic sight jump this, every heartbeat. Boom.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom. And it's really off-putting. Now, this is why when you're sniping, wherever possible, you don't do it alone. You work in pairs, because the person next to you has a pair of binoculars. So when you're looking through your narrow lens, everything is magnified, and every little problem, like doo-doo, is magnified, and it puts you off your game. So you have someone with a wider view to give you perspective, and you work together, and they calm you down, they tell you what's coming, and you know you can work effectively. And so it's exactly the same in anything that we do, because quite often when we're working on something by ourselves, we just get so tunnel visioned about it, and then, you know, molehills become mountains, and it's not really a problem, we just think it's a problem. So whatever you're doing, if you can find a partner to help you, so whether it's within your business, if you're running your business all by yourself, if somehow you can get some sort of partnership, someone to come and take a bit of the load, someone with different skills, a different perspective on things, working together, you're going to be far more effective than working by yourself.
I love that so much, because I'm the sniper guy and my wife is the person that can see broadly. Yeah. So I get so focused in the things that I do that I lose control over everything else. And like to put it into that sense where if a sniper is looking down the barrel, they got one eye shut or whatever you do, they're not looking at any enemies coming from other angles or anything like that. It just makes total sense. And I've never thought of it that way before. It's really cool.
Yeah, so, yeah, it is. And that, yeah. And you know, you talked about your wife. I mean, quite often when we run a small business, it's our partners, our spouses who are our offsider. But you know, the reason I just mentioned this is I just had a haircut. Do you like it?
Yeah,
I was talking
good.
To the guy who's cutting my hair. And we were talking about partners, and he was saying, oh, yeah, really good if I didn't have to live with my wife at the moment. She's really rubbing me up the wrong way. And we got into this discussion about treating your spouse as you would a business partner. Because, you know, like if you want a business partner, just as you said, your wife has other skills, and together you work really effectively. So it's the same thing just in living at home with a partner, with your spouse. You know, those things that rub you up the wrong way, they're actually, if you reframe your thinking and go, they're actually the things that I should be encouraging in her.
Yeah.
Because they help my all my other blind spots, because things I do annoy her. And if we can reframe our relationships like that, more like a business, you know, things tend to run a little bit smoother. So just following on from the conversation.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, because we often say my wife and I, we're yin and yang. So like we're very different personalities. I'm very out there. I'm very, outspoken, energetic, and she's and extroverted, and she's introverted, and the other way around. But together, I help her become more confident, and she helps me be more grounded. Like we work really well together. And it's because over time, we've just gradually helped each other. It's as annoying as sometimes it is to hear that something isn't getting, like, I don't like to be told to slow down. I like to keep going faster. But like to hear it is like, well, I need to slow down now because life is important right now, you know? And it's really good when we can see each other from that point of view.
Yeah, you know, and while we're talking about that, one of the best things I've learned over the years, because I used to be, you know, relative to what I am now, an angry young man. I wasn't angry, but relative to what I was now. And one of the things that I've learned is very simple, and it's to respond, not react. Because quite often, you know, just in my work, with my relationships, you know, we all just get into a pattern of reacting. So someone says something and it's the trigger that sets us off.
Yeah.
We go off. And I've just learned now, it's as simple as I just don't say anything. And I give myself, it's normally only 5 or 10 seconds, just that little breather space to calm down a bit and respond rather than react. And so if you're in this for the long term, whether it's your relationship or your business, just getting that mindset going, it's you know, like it's the tortoise and the hare, right? So rather than a sprint, you're going to be in it for the marathon. It's going to be a much more comfortable marathon.
Yeah. Have you got any tips around that? Because often when you do react, it's from a trigger, like you said, and a trigger is like instant. So it's like, how do we stop the trigger being pulled?
How do you stop the trigger being pulled? I mean, it's difficult. Again, it's your response to that. But again, I mean, there's an American speaker named Mel Robbins. She's written a book called, I think it's The Power of Five or Count to Five. It's like she's built a whole career around getting people to do exactly that, just to count to five before you open your mouth.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that I hand on my heart, I go to the grave with no regrets in my life. I've taken all the opportunities that have come my way, except some of the things that I've said to people. You know, at times where I've just opened my mouth and said something was really hurtful when I should, if I just said nothing for 10 seconds, nothing would have happened. Diffused. I wouldn't have those regrets now.
Yeah. 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 It's crazy how quickly something can ignite and blast into flames when it didn't really need to.
Oh yeah, we're all human.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I'm interested to explore your work as a cameraman. Like you've been all over the world doing that. You know, you initially wanted to do it through the army, got pushed into infantry, then sniper, and then you finally got out and you become a cameraman for BBC, Discovery Channel, and those other ones. So can we talk a little bit about those experiences and what you've picked up on? You know, some stories you can tell. Some lessons that you've learned around that job?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I could go in and tell you individual stories, but it's more the lessons that I'm interested in. So just to be clear, that, you know, being the cameraman, that was like, I mean, I finished that over 10 years ago, and I've done other things since then. And it's more instructive, I think, to talk about me leaving the camera world. So what happened was I spent my life behind the camera. And do you know what the similarity between the camera and the sniper scope was, the connection? It gave me something to hide behind.
Yeah.
So, you know, all my, you know, for that 25 years, I was filming people in front of the lens who were very confident. And I was never very confident. And this, I started my life as a stutterer. So one of my earliest memories at about 7 years old was going to speech therapy lessons. And I stuttered into my youth, into my teens, into my 20s, and into my 30s, even when I was a cameraman. And I just decided when I was watching all these confident people in front of the camera that I wanted to be more like them. So again, I had to, I've got the saying, you know, you can't win a new game playing by the old rules. And so everything that I had used to get me, you know, to that point, a lot of it wasn't working. So I had to go and find out what would work. And so I kept on seeing these people in front of the camera, and I kept thinking, oh, I want to get in front of the camera. I want to affect some change out there. I want to do that. But I love my job. Like, I love being a cameraman. It was fantastic. Suited me down to the ground. And it took me going and visiting a prisoner on death row to help me get the trigger to make that change. And so that guy's name was Jimmy Filiaggi, or Jimmy Diffuse Filiaggi. And Diffuse was a nickname he had, Diffuse, because he had a short fuse.
Yeah.
If you poked him in the chest, if you had a fight, it was the worst thing you could have done. It was all over Red Rover. You were down. And he had this string of aggravated assaults behind him. So he had an anger problem. And this anger problem came to a head when he had this argument with his wife, Lisa, and he put a gun to her head and pulled the trigger. And so he was charged with murder, and he was on death row in Mansfield Prison in Ohio in the States. And his case was famous. I won't go into it. It's called the Twinkie Defense, but that's why I was over there covering it. So we got to go to death row and interview him because he's doing a documentary on anger.
Yeah.
You know, death row is like a prison within a prison within a prison. And it's really quite hard to get in there. And when you get in there, you got very limited time. We had an hour. And at the end of the interview, he stood up to go out. And I thought, oh, you know, you don't often get to meet a death row prisoner face to face. And I thought, I'm going to ask him something as he's going out. So as he was going out, I said, Jimmy, your life is obviously completely different to the life I lead. I got, you know, no idea. But surely there's one thing you can share with me that's going to be useful to me. He went, okay. Now, Jimmy was a big guy. He's about 6'3", 6'4", about two pick handles across the shoulder. And he said, come here, come closer. So I came closer, and like he was like looming up there.
Yeah.
And he said, lean forward. Uh-huh. He said, yeah, lean forward. So I started to lean forward. And as I'm leaning forward, I hear snap, because he's shackled from his ankles to his waist, from his waist to his wrist with chains. And he put his two hands out, and the short chain went snap. And he had his two hands out, index fingers extended, pointing towards me. And he said, lean lower. I said, okay. So I leant down lower. And as my head got down to where his hands were, he put his index fingers and he tapped on my temples like this. And he said, 8 inches. He said, you're 8 inches away from the best decision or the worst decision of your life. That's how quick it's going to happen. And I didn't understand at the time what he was telling me. I mean, I sort of took this in and went, oh, wow, okay. And it was years later when I was actually standing behind that camera. And remember I said I kept looking at people in front of the camera and wanting to change? It occurred to me that was never going to happen until I made the decision that I needed to be in front of the camera, which meant I couldn't be behind the camera at the same time. And it was at that moment that I knew that I was going to walk away from television. You know, that idea I told you before about taking the program into schools, that was the moment I knew it was going to happen. And so change is not a process. I always used to think it was, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to change and, you know, I'll start the process at 18, 25, I'll just take the steps. You can take the steps, but quite often you never make the change. I've worked out that change is a decision. And when you make that decision, and you'll know when you make a big decision about change. I know that, well, that story I just told you about the moment that that started me thinking about it. And I know the moment I made the decision, I was sitting on my kitchen bench and I went, God, I'm going to go. I'm going to leave my TV career. And I cried. I honestly cried like a baby. It was like something had died. You know, like if someone dies and you mourn.
Yeah.
It was like a career. This was such a big part of me that I knew that I had to leave behind if I was going to move forward. And so, you know, change, unless you make that decision, is not going to happen. But when you do make the decision, that's when it gets exciting.
Yeah. So a big thing for me is the choice to stop drinking. My family drinks a lot. I drank a lot. And it was affecting my family life with my young kids at the time. They were like under 2, 3, sort of those sort of years. It was a really tough time as a parent. And it was affecting my parenting ability. It was affecting my ability to be a good husband. And I decided to just stop drinking. And people were like, what, you? Like, how do you stop drinking? Because I used to drink a lot. And I decided to. That was it. I made the choice. Yeah. I'm not drinking anymore. And that was it.
And it sounds like you've replaced that with this, you know, business that you've got going now, helping others and, you know, improve their business and online skills and doing this podcast, is that you've got to, you know, if you make a change, you've got to have a process to go on to fill that void.
I just had way more energy to be able to do more things. So, and I realized after completely taking it away that how much of a distraction it was, you know, distracting me from what is actually happening, distracting me from my feelings, distracting me from, you know, lots of things. So, that was a big lesson, but it was a choice in the end. And once I made the choice, it was easy not to do it.
And that's what happened with me. So once I had made that choice, I took that program into schools, like I said, to deafening silence, and it failed. And when it failed, I mean, I pushed it for a couple of years and got it in schools, but it was so hard. I just knew that this was flogging a dead horse. And basically I had no money coming in, so I had to reinvent myself. So when I was a cameraman, what I always used to do was carry magic, you know, a couple of magic tricks in my camera vest, because get this, apparently people don't trust the media. I know. Big surprise. So I used to use magic as a way of building rapport with people. You know, if people had kids around, you do some magic tricks for the kids, they'd start laughing, the parents start laughing. It just helps, you know, build that bridge, which, you know, really important for telling effective stories. And so I had these magic skills. And so I used those magic skills and I became a magician, a professional magician for 5 years. That was the next career reinvention.
Awesome.
And,
Did you do magic at the schools that you were pitching to with your other idea?
Yeah, so I use magic as part of the program. I use that to get the kids' attention. Because if you go into a school and say you're taking a program in, they say, oh, kids, who wants to learn dancing? Oh, yeah. Who wants to learn singing? Oh, yeah. Who wants to learn magic tricks? Yeah. All hands go up. You know, it's just such a powerful hook. So I use that as the hook and put the messages in that. But then, you know, I was doing kids and family shows, and look, you know, I learn a lot, and I learn a lot about, again, my confidence about performing in front of people. Cause I mean, I wasn't very good at that at all, but yeah, I did over 2000 shows. You get a heck of a lot better standing in front of people doing it. And then, but you know, in me, I had this part that wanted to affect change in the world somehow. So I took another small program into schools where I taught kids simple magic tricks and taught them a trick, but embedded some sort of values lesson or character developing, you know, little story in that.
Nice.
I taught two tricks every time that I went into the school, but it was too much for the kids to take in. They needed to be able to review those tricks. So I put them on YouTube And a long story short, they became popular and people asked for more. And it led me to having a popular YouTube channel. It's still there. It's called Julian's Magician School. In its time, it got 30 million views and still got 140,000 subscribers to it.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I know. Cool. It took off and it gave me this prominence in the world of magic that, you know, I came in as an outsider. Then all of a sudden I had a voice. So I started to reach out to the people who were viewing and asking them questions and looking at the metrics. And I got a big surprise because I thought it was just kids watching, but there was a spike, males 35 to 55 years old. And so I reached out to these people and just said, who are you? Why are you watching this channel? And they said, because what you do is completely different. Everyone else just teaches tricks, but you teach how to perform tricks.
Yeah.
And we, you know, like, and most of them, what I felt, and I said, well, if I was to teach you something extra, what would that be? And I said, we want to learn how to put a magic show together because we know how to do tricks, but we don't know how to join them together. What's the glue in between? How do you make a show out of it? Yeah. So I built a product called Build Your Magic Show. And it was this massive online training course, which today still stands as one of the biggest ever courses made in the world of magic. Lesson in that, if you're building online courses, do not build big courses. Smaller, more achievable.
Yeah.
But this gave me this prominence. And I, I formed a company with a guy in the United Kingdom, and we created the world's first online training academy for professional children's entertainers. So it was an online training platform, and we took people all around the world who harbored this desire to be a professional children's entertainer but didn't know how. And we taught them the skills of magic and balloon twisting and juggling and that sort of stuff. But we taught them the mindset and the change skills that they needed and took them to being sometime, part-time and full-time professional children's entertainers.
Awesome.
Did this for a couple of years and then ended up selling that business.
Awesome. How good's that? That's so good. So what is, like, can you share a trick with me now?
A trick with you now. I got hang on. Yeah, okay, here we go.
All right.
Can you see that?
Yeah, there's a coin. I'm just gonna talk you through anyone just listening.
Okay, there's a coin. Right, little blow.
Put it in his hand. What?
It's gone, but
he put it in his hand, he blew his hand and it's gone. And now it's in the other hand. And he didn't touch hands. How good's that?
Yeah, it's always a little bit of fun.
That's so good. I'm going to find out how to do that. I'm going to go to the YouTube channel. Cool. How good's that? Well done. That's really cool. So what did you take away from performing in front of kids? Like, what did you learn about kids doing this?
Oh, that biggest thing I learned from kids, if you can't get a laugh out of a fart, you're not trying hard enough. So the thing I learned about performing for kids is that performing for kids is actually harder than performing for adults, because as adults, we know that if we go along and we watch something, there are social rules. You know, if you don't really like it, you just sit there and suck it up. But kids are completely different. Kids are like people at a comedy club who are drunk. They just blurt it out. Or worse than blurting it out, they actually get up and just walk out of the audience. So it's really quite brutal. So you've got to learn techniques about engaging kids. And there's many techniques. And I'll tell you two really simple things, and you can use these in your work. Right? Number one, if you're losing attention of people, what you do is you lower your voice and you start to talk soft. Rather than if you're trying to engage people and yelling and trying to get on top of them, talk quieter. Amazing, bringing your voice down brings people in.
And it's counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah. And if people, if you're talking and you're seeing people looking down on their smartphones and not engaging, just start to talk slower and quieter. And all of a sudden they're shocked. They're like, oh, hang on, what's different? And they'll look up. So it's the opposite of what you think. You don't yell at people to get attention. You go the other way. And the second thing, if you want to get anyone's attention, kids' attention or adults, tell them a great story. They will sit there and they will just lean in and stay transfixed. And so we can if you have, in your business, if you have to work, I don't know, alongside a new apprentice that comes in or someone, you know, it's your job. Every couple of weeks, you've got someone new to come in and you've got to give them information. If you're finding the information is not getting across, is there a story? Is there something that happened to you when you use that tool that you can create a little story around? And if you don't know how to tell a story, I never did originally. I had to learn the elements of storytelling. It's not hard. It's a skill. It's just a process. But if you can learn that, you will get people's attention. And more than that, the information will stick. What do we do? The story of the Bible, the story of whatever, you know, these are stories that anyone can tell because they're stories. Stories endure over time. So it's powerful to use in your career.
Yeah, like Abraham Lincoln was an avid storyteller. Like his story told everything.
Yeah.
From what history wrote. But have you got a basic format for anyone that just wants to get a better, just to give it a go with their family, friends, you know, just a basic framework of how to do a better storytelling?
I can't do better than Aristotle. Aristotle is the father of the three-act storytelling. This is, any movie, any Broadway play is all based upon the three-act storytelling. So it's three acts. The first act is you introduce the characters. Now, this is, character A, this is character B, and also the landscape and where they live, is that the environment is a character as well. So, you sort of set the scene. Act two is you introduce conflict between the characters. We're interested in drama. If you tell her everything's a happy, perfect story, nobody's interested. Look at all the programs you watch. Something happens where, people get in trouble or they butt heads together or there's emotional tension. So there's drama. So you create conflict between the characters. So, it could be if you're in a workplace that, you went in and, you thought that this piece of equipment did this. And so you were using it a certain way, but what you didn't know was that something down there, someone had, plugged it into the wrong point or whatever. So, you build up a little bit of tension, then something happens, right? Causes a problem. Then you bring in act three. You resolve the problem. It's the resolution. So here's a simple one. A boy finds a cat stuck up a tree, right? And then these other kids come along and start throwing stones at the cat. And then the fire brigade come along and put a ladder up and rescue the cat. That's the resolution and the simplest things. So the three acts of storytelling, introduce your characters, create some drama between them, and then resolve the drama.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. That's good. Good tips. Thanks. So good. So 60 years old, you said. So with now that you've, lived through your life,
I'm not finished yet. Hang on. Still, don't.
But plenty to go still. Like you said, still plenty of chapters to go. But up until now, what would be the biggest thing that you could give to your 20-year-old self or someone maybe coming out of high school?
Particularly now, is that you've got to have a love of learning. And this is particularly important because there was a writer, his name was Alvin Toffler, back in the 1970s in the United States, and he wrote something. This is back 50 years ago he wrote this. He said, the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write. It'll be those who can't learn, unlearn, and relearn. And so if you don't have a love of learning, if you think, they made me learn in school and now I've got to come out and got a job and I don't have to do any more learning and that's good enough, I respectfully ask you to reconsider that idea that you've got in your head. Technology is changing so fast and you know that out there.
Yeah.
You know that you have to learn and then unlearn what you've learned and relearn it. And this has to become a habit. And again, this comes to with this attitude that we talked about right back at the start. If you show that this is your attitude, that you're willing to take on new ideas and new technology and, you know, not go, oh, well, we've always done it that way and I want to do it that way. If you show that to employers, that is so attractive and so valuable. So that's one of the most important things. And the second thing I would say is improve your communication skills. And this is what I do now. So I work with businesses now. I call myself a smartphone video evangelist. So we're all going into the video age. We have to use video more and more, just as we're talking now, we're doing a video recording on it. And so we're all going to have to be making videos. And if you were saying, yeah, but not me, not my job, it's not true. You're all going to be using video. So get out there and get comfortable using it. So I promote the bit that you start using videos on your smartphone, because smartphones are where the future of video is going. The greater is because of it's all the artificial intelligence and the computing power. It's like the Swiss Army knife of business tools. It's like a pocket-sized TV station. And particularly for your work, your branding, it's an anti-invisibility machine. You can be making social media videos, marketing videos, training videos for people in your team. You can do it all on your smartphone. So get on board with the video. And if you want any help with that, that's what I do now. You know, I've got online training courses showing you how to get straight in and use smartphone for business.
Awesome. So good. So with communication as well, have you got any books or audio books or courses like your course or any other courses that have helped you get better at that?
Look, yes, there are books along the way. Boy, off the top of my head, specifically for communication, I don't know. But the best thing to get you in the right mindset to understand what I'm talking about with using video communication, I have a free 35-minute smartphone masterclass. And if you go to my website at julianmather.com, you'll see it at the top. It's 35 minutes and it's going to paint the picture. You know, I was saying that video is changing. This is all about business. And it's going to show you the ways video, the way that video is going and the way customer behavior is changing. Because people think about making a video, that want to make a video for what they like. It's got nothing to do with what you like. It's about what your customers are reacting to, and it's completely changed. And you've heard the word about, you know, about authentic videos.
Yeah.
Now, you know, people like that. It's a bit rough and ready. It's so true, because people aren't responding to the glossy sort of videos anymore, because they're the sort of videos that government makes, banks make, churches make, and banks and governments and churches have all let us down. And we're becoming distrustful of that. And we're looking to each other for human to human, for one-on-one advice. And you know that, you know, you go online and you want to get a product, you go and look for testimonials and reviews. Somebody like you, like me, has made a review about it. That's the videos that are working. So you don't have to be great at performing. You've just got to go, I think I could help somebody with the knowledge that I've got in my head. So I've got a product, I've got a service, and I'm just going to make a video like I'm sitting at a coffee table with someone in a coffee shop and listening to them and go, okay, this is how I think, I could help you. Have you thought of this? And you make videos like that and they do really well for your business.
Yeah, so good. So I don't know if you got a chance to see, and I don't know if it's even connected through our conversation anyway, but for Response Electricians and anyone who hasn't seen our videos, we are next level video. It's like we are singing, dancing, comedy, all that sort of stuff in uniform for our electrical company. And it's authentic and it's real and it's genuine and people love it. So, you know, I think I just got to support what Julian's saying about video is the way of the future for you and your business and connecting person to person. It's because, you know, we're not making this corporate, you know, glossy video like you're talking about. I've tried that as well. And we've tried being professional and saying, hey, look, electrical safety devices in your switchboard, they're going to save your life. No one cares when you do that. But if you sing it, or if you make it entertaining or make it human, then people want to listen. So yeah, definitely get out there and check out that course from Julian, for sure. Cool. All right, Julian, well, thanks for your time. Do you have anything else you want to add before we finish it up?
No, just come along and visit me at julianmather.com and go get out there, take some chances. Don't take yourself so seriously. And we know when you're making videos, don't worry that people are going to criticize you. They don't. I've made thousands of videos online. The number of people who've criticized me is that, and you know, the number of people who've gone, oh, thanks for helping me is that. So just get out there and get over yourself.
Awesome. Thank you for your time and sharing all of those the wisdom and all of those tips, and it's been exceptional. So really appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Cool. Thanks. Bye.